Sometimes I feel that it's okay, I mean, whatever, if we minimize our needs, so then I don't need more to work. And but sometimes I feel that, like in the last 15, 17 years, like earlier I used to work, whatever work, and the results would be in terms of financial gain. I would maybe earn 20%. Now the work is 20% and the gain is much more. So is it that I should leave that, or in fact I should work 7-8 hours and then try to put maximum for, like, is it a good?
Everything should be in moderation. That was the Greek society's idea. And Krishna tells that in Gita. A yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. One who is moderate, and his habits of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and recreation, he says, he can make advancement in spiritual life. Prabhupada tells a story of his uncle in Calcutta. He used to have a sari shop, clothing shop, and he had a family with some children. And he calculated his budget. Everyone has a budget, right? You make a budget. Rent, gas, etc. So many expenses, and then fun, travel, savings, emergencies, etc. Guru Dakshin, whatever, if you have different categories. Like they have in Chopati Beach, they have something called tithing. They don't do any life membership there. They've never done, Radhanath Swami's never done life membership, but he has something called tithing. Tithing is a Christian idea, where the congregational members of a particular parish or church that are frequenting a church, and they're part of that congregation, then they give a percentage of their income. As the old days, the king used to extract taxes from the farmers. They would give a percentage of their yield of their crops as taxes to the king. And the king in turn would give them protection, and he would give them the property also to farm. He owned the property. The king owned everything. Like now we say Sarkari Zamin or something, government land, or DDT, DDD land, or whatever.
DDD.
What do they call it? DDD? DDT? Delhi Development. DDA. So they say, oh, this is private land. Oh, this is DDA. Oh, maybe they can sell it to you, or whatever. So in the same way, the king owned all the land, and he would give it out to people, or lease it, or allow them to... He owned it, and he could throw them out, or whatever he wanted. So, okay, you can farm this land. It's like it's yours. And you can farm 100 acres and get 100 acres of wheat, but you give me 5 acres wheat for payment. That's the kind of original taxes. So this Chopati Beach, they have a tithing where 10% of their income of the congregation is to be given to the temple, which is quite a bit. It's a lot of money. 10% of your income. You know, you make 5 lakhs a month, you give 50,000 to the temple. That's a pretty serious donation. And he has some big disciples also, Nathji and Narendra Desai. He owns Indian Oil, or one of those oil companies. He owns an oil company, that's a big thing. Another one is his name is Krishna Chandra. He's Mafitlal. He has a textile company, Mafitlal. They have many companies. So they're very big people. So they have a big temple in Bombay. They have a huge farm project, and they maintain Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So it's like this. So the idea we're speaking is that that's the questions in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Those are the very questions. It said that dharmostita, he said that dharma should not be engaged in just for making profit. In other words, we're religious or pious, we follow the path of religion or piety, but it's not just to make money. Dharma, art, kama, moksha. The purpose of human life is self-realization. That's really the most important thing for us to do. Raising families and having jobs and and doing different things in this world is rather irrelevant and unnecessary ultimately. But just something we have to do because of our ichha. Ichha-dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. We're born in this world because of ichha, because of desire. And we're propelled by raga and dvesha, attachment and hatred, or love and hate. Raga is attachment or love. And dvesha is envy, or you can say disinterest. We like or dislike, basically. That's how we operate. We like something, that's called rag. We like it, we become attached to it. We like the things we're attached to, and we're attached to the things we like. And that's rag. And dvesha is envy. Envy, you say irshya, or something like that, irshya. Envy, jealousy, it means dislike. They don't like. So this is these dualities here in this world, accepting, rejecting. Sankalpa, and sankalpa means exception. Accepting something, acceptance, or resolution, or vow, or determined. This is sankalpa. You want something that you want. This is what you want more than anything else, as we mentioned on Prikama. Our spiritual ambition, our spiritual resolution, the service of Radharani, the service of Radharani's lotus feet, Radhadasyam, Palyadasi Bhav, to become a Palyadasi of Radharani, and Manjri Bhav, and Madhurya Bhav. That's our spiritual sankalpa. That's our destination. That's our goal. That's our ambition. Or at least we hear that that's a good thing to desire. We hear that that's a good thing to desire. Then we read about mandris and we read about sakis and we see how they relate and how they exchange and how they serve Radharani especially. The different services they render. And we become attracted and we become interested. And then we start to hear more and become more attracted. And then Krishna arranges for us to understand that and become qualified for such a perfection. So this working thing is a lot of things involved. Basically, Krishna is telling that we have to perform work. We have to work. We have to be engaged. And as you've heard many times, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. If the mind is idle, then we get into wrong activities, sinful life, materialistic pursuits. So we have to keep engaged, keep our mind engaged. So if someone, say someone has lots of money and they could even retire, their next question is, what would you do? What would you do? You're active, you're young, you're active, your mind is active, you're restless, there's lots of passion in your body by nature, by prakriti. Now how to use that passion for Krishna's service? Do you have an outlet? Do you have an outlet for your creativity? Do you have an outlet for your passion? And if not, then you'll become frustrated. You'll become, let's say, disengaged and frustrated because you become bored. So we should follow our appetite. You eat when you're hungry. You stop when you're full. And someone can bring you the most tasty, delectable items in front of you and say, no, I really can't eat more. I have no more appetite. So when we have to move according to our ruchi. We move according to our ruchi, our taste, our rati. Ruchi and rati. Our taste and our attraction. Ruchi, rati, bhav, prem. That's the same in the material world. We have a taste for something and we're attracted to it. And then we love it. And we love it fully, unlimitedly. So that's our bhav. Our prem. So if you prematurely give up your engagement, which is filling up your days and nights, then how will you fill up your days and nights? Because you're so busy and doing so many things. Of course, they're all useless and ultimately non-productive in terms of the purpose of human life, which is self-realization. Making money day and night, 24 hours a day, working and making money, doesn't promote the cause of self-realization. It's diametrically opposed. It has nothing to do with it. Self-realization is you become self-realized by hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, padasevanam. Whether you make money, make no money, or you beg, whether you're rich or poor, it's the same for both. It's not that by being poor you become Krishna conscious. It's not by acting you become Krishna conscious. It's not by becoming rich you become Krishna conscious. And it's not by becoming inactive you become Krishna conscious. It's by absorbing yourself in the service of Krishna that you become Krishna conscious, hearing, chanting, remembering. So whatever we do, whatever work we're doing, it should be connected to our, it should give us the ultimate good. It should bring us the ultimate good. It's called Shreyas and Prayas. Shreyas means ultimate good, long-range benefit, which means it'll push us towards self-realization. It'll bring us closer to God realization, and that's a good thing, and we should do it. But if it's taking us away from God, and taking us away from self-realization, then we should reject it. Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Rupa Goswami says, Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam, Rakshishya Titi Vishaso, Guptatve Varanandata, Karpanye, Nikshepa, Karpanye, Nikshepa, Atmanavedanam. Something like this. He's explaining there's six sentences of Sharanagati. Sadvida, Sadvida Sharanagati. Shadvida Sharanagati. Shadvida, Vida means classes of or types of surrender. Sharanagati. Going for shelter. Sharanagati. Sharanagata. Agata, moving towards the goal of Sharan, shelter or surrender. Accepting everything favorable for Krishna consciousness, self-realization, Krishna prema, love of God. Anukulyasya sankalpa. Sankalpa, I said, remember? Acceptance, resolution, vow, determination. Anukul, anukul. Means a good cool, good family, anukul, favorable. That which is good, that which promotes a cause, is anukul. Pratikul means against your family, against your group. Kula means group or family, cool. It's cool, it's school. You know school? School is cool. Guru, cool, is guru, school. School is cool. Right, you got it. But school ain't cool. People don't like to go to school, but in Sanskrit, school is cool. Gurukul is school. So school is cool. Cool. So gurukul. So pratikul means against your cool. Hey man, this goes against my cool. It ain't cool. So pratikul means against your bhakti. Pratikulyasya Varjana means to reject, let go. Reject that which is unfavorable for bhakti or self-realization. So is making lots of money and working like a workaholic day and night, is that favorable for self-realization? That makes me peaceful, makes me sattvic, puts me in Vasudeva consciousness or Shuddha Sattva consciousness, and I feel very relaxed and very peaceful. And by working like a workaholic, I can fix my mind peacefully on Krishna's lotus feet and remember him and think of his name, Nam Rup Guna Lila. Then that workaholic activity, that rat race, that 24 hours Chobis Ganta Kam, is very anukul for bhakti. Bhakti anukul, favorable for bhakti. However, if you find that such a passionate rat race, 9 to 5 or 9 to 9 or 20 chopis ganta kam, rather disturbs and agitates your mind and puts you in utter desperation and fills you, and you have to take shelter of Tylenol and Panthenol and all in all and every all in all, and you had it all then just to take rest, then you may consider that I am working too much. I should slow down. Everything in balance, everything in moderation. Sleep 8 hours, work 8 hours, play 8 hours. Haribo. But now we sleep 8 hours. Okay, that's guaranteed. That's in writing. Sleeping has to be 8 hours. But now, what do we do with a 16 balance? Now we work for 12. Commute for 4. Then what's left? Zero. No time for eating. People don't have, nowadays people don't have time to eat. They eat on the run, which means they're not eating. It means they're running. You're either running or eating. Eating means sitting, not running. Running is running and eating is eating. Do dogs eat on the run? Do dogs eat on the run?
No.
Yes or no?
No?
No. They sit down and eat. So who's more civilized? You or the dog? The dog. The dog, he runs. So there, here, there, everywhere, chasing his nose. There's a fragrance. There's something good over there. He runs. Oh, it's nice. Oh, it's too. Oh, no, it's not so good. Oh, another smell. Oh, that smells good. And he gets it. Oh, dead animal. Oh, that's very good. And that's nice lunch. So he eats, and then he's, so what does he do? I have to take this with me to the office. Eat on the train. Eat on the plane. And he picks up dead animal. No, he just sits down right there. He just plops down wherever he is and eats the dead animal. Dead rabbit or whatever. So we don't have this phrase in the animal kingdom. They don't eat on the run. Well, we're so civilized. We think it's really modern that we make a little hole in the side of our car door where we can put our coffee cup, and we make our coffee and run out the door and put our coffee cup in the hole in the side of the door in the panel. So this is very sophisticated. This, you can only get these holes in the door if you spend 10 lakhs on your car. If you buy a 2 lakh Maruti, you can't get a little teacup holder on the side of your armrest. See, I'm very, very advanced. This Maruti Wala, he's very unfortunate. He's forced to sit home and drink his tea. But me, I can run out of my Mercedes, and right in between the seats, there's a little table. There's a little table. I can put my breakfast there. While I'm driving, I eat my breakfast. This is more than rat race. Rat race, even the rats don't race like this. They say rat race in America is the rat race, but the rats aren't racing like this. Rats sit down and eat and they chit chat and they race around at night in the kitchen, but they don't eat and race. At least they have enough brains to sit down and.
Rats feel offended like this.
Yeah, they don't compare us. These guys have their own. These guys are having their own races. Rat races. That's a good point. They're being offended. It's a human race. So this point about workaholic, it's like... And the other thing is that because in the absence of bhakti, when bhakti is not there, all we're left with is desire. And not only one desire, but one lack of desires. Two lacks of desires. I want this, and I want that, and I want this and that, and a bigger this and a bigger that. And all these big wants and big desires means big bucks. Big rupees or whatever. Baro rupiah. I mean lots of money. And lots of money means either cheating, stealing, or hard work. And hard, you know, this, and then you get yourself in a bind because your desires tie up your life and tie up your time. And eat away the vitals. Eat away the vital energy of a man or a woman, whatever, a person. Because we're not satisfied. We want more, bigger, better, faster, newer, fresher, thicker, fatter, taller, whatever. New, improved. This is not Nirmal soap powder. This is new, improved Nirmal soap powder. Before it was only yellow. Now it's yellow with blue speckles. You see these blue speckles? That's the difference. That's the super cleansing power particles. You know, make up any bogus talk, and you say, "Oh, it's new and improved." Old Nirmal soap powder was 5 rupees, but the one with blue speckles is 50 rupees. So I'm such a sucker. I had to pay 50 rupees to get the 5 rupee soap powder. And then the only person that's laughing is Nirmal. You know, whoever, you know, Hyatt region, what do they call it? Whatever the guy makes it, you know. Hindustan Lever. Hindustan Lever is laughing his way to the bank. So these stupid fools. I dropped some potassium permanganate I took some. I took potassium permanganate is naturally blue. It's a rock, and I crushed it up and I threw a few pieces into my five ruby soap powder. Now I sell it for 50 rupees. These stupid jerks. And I just give it some name: Blue Sparkle Super Cleansers, you know, or something like that.
Power pills.
Power pill. You know, whatever. They pay these college kids like $1,000 a day to figure out new lingo. You know, and it's all a hype. It's just the same old. And what is it to begin with? What that yellow powder was to begin with is soda, washing soda, which is white, and they put some yellow dye in it. That's what the first thing was for 5 rupees a kilo, because washing soda is only 2 rupees a kilo, and you know, when it started. So it's like it's a cheat on top of a cheat on top of a cheat. So this whole program is that we should develop our devotion for God. And then that's why Prabhupada said simple living, high thinking. There's no question of simple living. It's first, actually, I should rephrase it. It should be rephrased like this. High thinking. Thinking of Krishna generates simple living. But thinking minus Krishna does not generate simple living. Now it's complex living and no thinking. Right? Like your father, after chanting for 25 minutes, he's starting to think. Dinky's father. He's chanting, now he's thinking. First time in 62 years. First time in 62 years he started thinking. Before he was just working like a, you know, for his family. So this is, you know, work. This is the situation. You work, and then you sleep, and then you play. Everywhere the wife complains, my husband doesn't spend any time with the family. Everywhere the kids complain, my husband doesn't. And then the husband says, well, my dear wifey, you have 45 million desires. You want me to fulfill them all, and at the same time you want me to spend time with the family. So either you have to sacrifice 44 million desires. So this will never happen. Never ever happen. Never ever. Unless one becomes devoted to God. Then everyone becomes satisfied, because devotion brings satisfaction, brings knowledge and detachment. Bhakti has two children, Gyan and Vairagya. We don't separately endeavor for Gyan or Vairagya. We study, that's part of Bhakti. Study is part of Bhakti. And Krishna is pleased by studying. That's why he spoke all the Shastras, Bhagavatam, Gita, Upanishads. He spoke them, he taught them to whom? To us. To human beings. So we study them, we hear them, we live by them, we remember them, and we find happiness there. And that's bhakti itself. And just by doing that limb of bhakti, we get all that knowledge is revealed within us, and then that knowledge brings a happiness. That knowledge brings a taste. And that taste, that ruchi brings asakti. Asakti means attachment, or rati. Rati means bhava, actually. That ruchi, that taste, that satisfaction, that taste, that pleasure of transcendental knowledge, it brings along with it not only the knowledge itself, the knowledge of God, prakriti tattva, the knowledge of this world, ishvara tattva, the knowledge of God, jiva tattva, the knowledge of the jiva, kala tattva, the knowledge of time, and karma tattva, the knowledge of action. This knowledge one attains or one acquires by studying, by the limb of bhakti, of studying transcendental books. But this knowledge has a special feature. It's knowledge, special, transcendental, perfect knowledge about reality. You, God, and this world. What more is there? There's nothing more than the jiva, God, and this world, and the spiritual world. So that knowledge one attains. But this knowledge has a special feature in that it's very, very tasty. Taste, what is taste? When you taste something, you feel satisfaction. When you taste something, you feel pleasure. When you taste something, you get nourishment. Right? So it's tushti, pushti, and bhakti. So when we get this knowledge, we get ruchi, we get taste, we get some satisfaction. And then we get asakti. Asakti means attachment. We become attached to Krishna. we become satisfied and we become attached to Krishna. When we become satisfied and attached to Krishna, then we become detached from this material world. And we don't need to get material things to find pleasure, because we become satisfied and pleased by the transcendental knowledge of Krishna and by developing our relationship with Krishna. So then we can truly come to the platform of simple living and high thinking. Because our high thinking means thinking of God. And we think of God and we know God, then we become very satisfied. Become peaceful, become satisfied, and become attached to God. So therefore, we don't need so many things. If you don't need so many things, then you don't need so much money. So when you don't need so much money, then you can simplify your work, reduce your workload. But when you say, oh, we need an apartment. Okay, we should have an apartment. How much money do we have? Well, we have enough money for a 5 lakh apartment. But we want a 3 crore apartment. Well, how can we get a 3 crore apartment? We can take a 500-year loan. We can take a loan for 500 years and then work like asses. And then, and of course, we'll never actually be living in our 5 crore apartment, 3 crore apartment, because we're all day in a shop working. We're spending all day in a shop working to pay the bank. So we've sold our souls to the company store. We're slaving for the bank to pay our loans out, our exorbitant bank loans, to enjoy our dream house, which we're never in. We built a 3 crore dream house for the cockroaches. Haribo! And when they move in with their ant friends and Jing Gillies or whatever those guys are, and a whole crew of buddies, you know, those guys are crawling down the walls and Jingors, Jingors, no, those are guys that jump. There's the guys that jump are like Jingors, and then other guys go up and down the wall. What are those guys? Lizard dwellers? Chip Kali and Jingali and all this guy, all these Kali guys, Kali friends, and then they're chirping our way and you know, making all a big mess, and then we're out all day working for these guys. And we're so dead on our feet and we're so tired. And we come home to our 3 crore apartment and then all we do is fall on the floor and go to sleep. And then all these guys run around the kitchen, eat all our food, and we're working so hard for the bank and the cockroaches. And we call this life in the fast lane. This is modern life. It's a kind of a absurd tragedy. Simple living, high thinking. The trouble in the villages, in Indian villages, people live very simply, but they're not thinking. They're just busy with kids and family, but they're living simply, but they're not really reaching up high to high thinking. Some are very pious and God-centered. But mostly they just reach out to the television and spoil their free time in the TV. Get brainwashed, and they also get influenced with so much consumer brainwashing, so they get influenced by all kinds of useless squirt guns and trinkets and latest gadgets and cell phones. So this whole rat race is, when one becomes a little knowledgeable, because you can only move on the strength of your knowledge. If your knowledge is meager, you can't do much. You can't move much. You don't have much mobility in this world. Knowledge gives mobility. And when you attain transcendental knowledge, you get the utmost mobility. Because you can move right out of the material world. You can transcend. Transcend means to go beyond. To go beyond, 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 far beyond. That's transcend. You go beyond what? You go bhur, bhuva, swa, janaloka, mahaloka, tapaloka, satyaloka, and then satyaloka, then you go to shivaloka, then cross the karana samudra and sada shivaloka, then you go into Vaikuntha, higher Vaikuntha planets, go to Ayodhya, then Dwarka, then Mathura, and finally Brajagokul, and finally Vrindavan, then Rasastali, then Govardhan, and then Radhakund. So this is the highest possible attainment, the pinnacle of spiritual perfection. But we're so busy doing so many useless things, pushing papers and buying and selling, and our life is going by like sand falling through the hourglass or the egg timer. They have these little things, turn it over. Of course, we don't time too many eggs these days, but the sand goes, falls down, and then it's time to. So our life is sand falling through the glass, and it slips through our hand before we know it, and then we're flat. And then we only lament, oh, I should have done this, and I should have done that. This is lamentation. So, before it's too late to lament, we should get serious about life. So if God has given us facility, that's due to our good acts in our previous life. Good actions, punya karma, at least this is our traditional teaching of the Vedas. People would think like this hundreds of years ago, and people don't think like this anymore. They think, oh, it's only my good work, I've built up this estate, it's all me. But our Vedic seers of the truth and our Vedic scriptures, they tell us something different. That good deeds and good results in this life are due to last life, good activities. So if we have more than what we need for the basics of life, of happiness, then we should help others. The unfortunate, they're there. Donate land, houses, food, clothing, food. Build temples, build schools, hospitals. So many things we can do. You see there are many charitable foundations and trusts all around the world. You must be aware of. So maybe we don't have billions of dollars to do huge foundations, but we give according to, we can do something good according to our means. If we have 5 lakhs extra every year, then we distribute it for good purposes. We need a lakh to live, we keep a lakh. We have extra, distribute. Some of us aren't in that position. You know, some of us are like scrimping and saving everything we can. So that's the idea of Ravinder, is to, especially once you can, you know, when a man's between the age of 40 and 50, generally a working person that has kind of established himself usually reaches kind of the peak of what he's either made it or he hasn't made it by 40 or 50. And so between 40 or 50, he can kind of now start to wind down and adjust. Okay, these investments, these securities. And of course, the best investment is, your wife has mentioned gold, but land is much better than gold, as you must know. Gold increases to some extent, but not like land. Not at all like land. 3 years ago, property on the Govardhan Prikam Marg was 10 lakhs a biga. Now it's 40 lakhs a biga in 3 years. 10 lakhs to 40 lakhs. Right on the Prikam Marg. I mean, that's... gold doesn't jump up like that. But land practically anywhere increases. And that can... and purchasing land eats up a lot of money too. You know, just buying a little, you know, you can... if you have 20, 30 lakhs extra lying around, you can buy 30 lakhs worth of land in 1 second. And there, that land is, that money is also tax-wise smart also. And then you have it. Because even gold is not sure, because the bank blows up. Land, you know, land usually stays there. And land turns into platinum, not... land is like platinum. You know, platinum?
Yes.
And then, because, in other words, if you can't think immediately what to do with charity and have extra money, then buy land. And then, and you just buy it and make a wall and then put a sign or whatever, this is owned by so-and-so industry or whatever. So no one fools around with it. And then maybe 20 years later, you sell it for an enormous fee and build a temple or a hospital for devotees or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And as you, if you keep earning, because you have energy, you say, well, I can't, like many people say, oh, I can't really do bhajan, I can't see myself, I don't have that much ruchi for Krishna consciousness. I mean, I'm 16 rounds, I'm initiated, but business, I'm a young guy, and business, I'm too passionate, I'm into business. So right now, let me make money. My guys and godbrothers, they're 55, 57, and they chant their rounds, and they come to the Holy Dham, and they spend a few weeks here and there in the Holy Dham. But they're fully into their business because they're still healthy and young and they're making millions and are just passing it out all over the place to help devotees. BBT, this thing, that thing. So that's how they're passing your time. They have the power to generate income and they're doing it and distributing it according to their choice in lots of nice, good ways. And they're Prabhupada disciples, but they don't feel that, you know, they're very passionate and very good in business, and they feel, and it doesn't, you know, they feel happy doing it. So they do it. So there's nothing wrong with it. That's quite a good thing. And they figure out how to actively, year to year, distribute what they earn every year. Either way, you should have save time for your bhajan. It's not that I have no time to chant my rounds, I have no time to read. That's not very good. That's not human life.
Actually, that's the problem. You're not able to maintain balance or moderation. You spoke about the moderation. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes especially my business, like if I take on a project, I make profit. If I don't take on a project, then like I make losses. There's no like, I can't say today at 6 o'clock, whatever customer comes, I attend them and leave. If I take on a project, I have to complete, maybe I have to work for 17 hours. And if I don't take on a project, then...
Then you can stay home all day and chat. So why'd you do that? Take on 3 projects, work for 72 hours, and then take off 2 days in your chat, or whatever. I don't know.
I do sometimes, like, it depends on the clients. Like, I'm working for 8 hours most of the time, but sometimes if I've said, yes, okay, I'll do this project, then like we don't get time, and at times we have to work 3 days, 4 days, 6 days without any intake.
Anyway, the whole idea is to spend what's important. We have to understand the important thing in life is to become Krishna conscious. And we should arrange our life and work in such a way that we can do that as much as possible. As much as we can arrange our life so that we can attain that, that's very good. Even if you have nothing to do, you have no expenses, no bills, and no family or anything. Even then, hardly there's any time to hear and chant. I can tell from my personal experience. I'm not working. I don't have any wife or mother, father or children, cousins, uncles, nephews, 15th cousins, 30th cousins, or any kind of cousins. No weddings. No birthday parties, no graduations, no housewarmings, no deathwarmings, and no any kind of anything. And 1,001 responsibilities. Nothing. And still, I don't have any time in the day to hear and chant about Krishna. I'm only lamenting, oh, I wish I had more time to hear and chant about Krishna. So many books piling up everywhere. Like Deepak was saying, oh, or you were saying, so many books to read, and have to do speed reading. If we read one book and we understand what's in it, we'll become Krishna conscious. You may have books piling up everywhere. That's okay. Pile up lots of books. Because if you have lots of Krishna books, then there's no room for Maya books. If every shelf, or every inch of every shelf is filled up with Krishna books, then someone says, oh, let's buy some Kali books, Kali Yuga books, some Maya books. So we have no room. Our bookshelves are all full with all these Krishna books. Oh, okay, let's not buy it. There's BTGs lying all over the tables from 10 years piled up. See, even I wanted you to all get 10 year subscriptions, but you're thinking, oh my God, I have to put so much money out there. But now they're not even selling 10 year subscriptions, Braj Mohan told me. And even now they're revising their rates, you know, but they were too low. So he said in a week or two they'll have revised 5 year rates. And that's the maximum. So, got some savings there. Any other questions? Some philosophical questions?
A general behavior of God brothers and God sisters, and the do's and don'ts, and there's main ones and things.
General behavior of God brothers and God sisters?
Interpersonal relations.
Always remember Krishna, never forget him. Respect everyone. Love everyone. And serve everyone. So love your God brothers, God sisters, And what about, you know, brother dog and sister dog? They're all bhaktas. Bhakta dog, bhakta bird, bhakta gilari. Bhakta squirrel. Love all. Let's make it a little broader. Love, respect all, love all, serve all. So it's not that God brothers and God sisters are in some special category of hominoids. They're like ETs. God brothers and God sisters are ETs. ET is extraterrestrial. Extraterrestrials. ET. Oh, God brothers. Oh. There's some kind of... Because everyone is your God brother, and everyone's your God sister. That's what I think. Someone comes in here, I say, "Are you Prabhupada?" "No, okay, get up." "Are you initiated by, you know, so and so?" "Oh no, I don't like you." We don't have this type of thinking. It's called bigotry, narrow-mindedness. Krishna doesn't think that. Oh, you're worshiping me? No, I worship Radharani. Oh, Radharani, I get out. You don't worship me? No, Krishna gives equally to everyone. Samaham sarvabhuteshu nadvesha nastriya priya. He says that I am equal to all. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. Aham sama. I am equal to sarvabhuteshu, all living entities. Name dvesha nastriya priya. I am not envious of anyone, or am I dear to anyone. I'm equal. I'm balanced with everyone. This is Krishna's viewpoint. So we should have that viewpoint. Of course, we feel ourselves some special camaraderie or some special sense of connection with our God brothers and God sisters, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, brothers and sisters. I feel, at least I project this into my consciousness, that they're special because we have the same father. You can imagine if you meet someone and if they are your father's brother's children, then they're your cousins, at least in America. Your father's brother's children are your cousins. So you feel something for them. Your father's Agarwal and you're Agarwal, and they're also Agarwal. So, you meet somebody, "What is your name?" "Acha." "Oh, you're son of Mr. Agarwal." "Oh, my father's Joe Agarwal." "Yeah, my he's my father's brother." "Really?" "Oh, we're cousins." "Oh, blah blah blah." You know. Then there's some special thing that comes out. So the point is that somehow something comes up. We don't know what it is. We really can't explain it rationally or tangibly. What is it? What is it when I meet Mr. Agarwal's children that makes me feel something? Oh, I should do something special. They're my cousins. I should really help. They're my cousins. But if you meet someone in the train station, "Hello, what's your name?" "Oh, my name's Mr. Chatterjee." You say, "Okay, hello, Mr. Chatterjee." Nothing comes up. You don't really feel anything. So in the same way, I really can't explain how it is, because I only had a couple brothers and they were all off here and there and older than me, so we didn't really have much, any kind of too much strong family feelings. But partially I'm propelled out of a sense of duty, but my sense of duty is mixed with a drop of love also, especially in the absence of my father, my Gurudev. When I meet a God sister, God brother, and I don't know them very well, because Prabhupada had 4,800 disciples initiated, about 5,000 initiated devotees, disciples. And I certainly didn't meet them all during Prabhupada's time. And even now, as I mentioned, after 32 years, I met a new one. And irregardless of the situation, because she was introduced as a God sister, I thought, oh, and there's not too many left. There's not too many of them. You don't get a chance. I felt something nice in my heart. Oh, Prabhupada, someone else who took shelter of my guru, Prabhupada. And I want to be nice to everyone. I want to be nice to everyone. But I want to be extra nice to my family members. and natural psychology for a human being. Some human beings are, well, I will be nice to my family members, but for you, I don't care. I don't give a whatever. But a devotee, he's samoham, so he's also like Krishna. He's equal to all living entities. That's why he's called equipoised. There's a verse like that in Bhagavad Gita. You know that verse? Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hashtani shuni chaiva sapake cha pandita sama darshanaha. Sama darshana means he sees equally. Sama, equal darshan. He sees equally. Who does he see? Who does he see equal? Why? How does he see equally? Vidya vinaya sampane. Because he has vidya, paravidya, transcendental knowledge. He sees a dog eater, a Brahmin, an elephant. He sees all of them are children of God. They're all Bhakta elephant, Bhakta Hati, Bhakti Brahmin, Bhakti Kuta, Bhakti Swapacha, Bhakta dog eater. The dog eater is eater of Bhakta dog. The Chandala, Bhakta Chandala, he's an eater of Bhakta dog. Well, this is not so good. One bhakta is eating another bhakta. The dog eater is eating the dog. And Chandal is eating the dog. Chandal, I say Chandal, right? Chandal? He eats the dog. He's from Korea. Korea. He eats the dog. The bhakta dog is being eaten by the dog eater. So he should rather eat Mahaprasad. So this is equal vision. How we should see, God brothers and God sisters, we should see that they are very special and I should serve them. I should respect them. I should love them. Even if they're ornery, even if they're puffed up, even if they're prettier than I am, even if they're wealthier than I am, even if they're uglier than I am, if they're fatter, taller, skinnier, older, younger, more knowledgeable, less knowledgeable, more advanced, less advanced. Doesn't matter. They're Agrawals. Once an Agrawal, always an Agrawal. So my God brother, he's fallen, he's breaking the principles, he's doing this, he's doing that. Oh, I don't like you anymore, you get out, good night, goodbye, you stink. No. Then we should love him more. Not hate him. Like Jesus said, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. So, God brothers are special, though we may not think so. Sometimes we think, oh, he's older God brother, he's younger God brother. That's also there. But our vision is always that everyone's better than me. Everyone's better than me, everyone's older than me. Everyone's more advanced than me. Trinada peace and each no. Tilray Vasishna Manida Manide Nakirtaniya Siddhari. Well, yeah, there's all that you mix with. Because the Madhya Madhikari has four. First, we're Kanishas. Well, the Rutams are Kanishas, but if we're moving in the world and not doing Nirjan Bhajan, then we have to move in the world according to where Kanishas going up or Rutams coming down. Then we're in the middle. So then we have to move in the world according to the dictates of Madhya Madhikari, or the behavioral pattern. So then he avoids the atheist. He associates with like-minded. He loves the Lord and he preaches to the innocent. You must have heard that. Those are four distinctions. Behavioral distinctions in short, and courses of movement. The atheists, the Buddhists, the Mayavadis, they're Gnostics, Arya Samajis, etc. They're all the ones to avoid. So then, if you're avoiding someone and not interacting with them, there's respect from a distance. Love and service requires intimacy. Doesn't it? You can't serve and love someone that lives a million miles away. Well, of course you can do that also. my guru, Prabhupada's in the spiritual world, but I'm trying to love him and serve him. Well, you can do that. But there's a certain amount of intimacy. So it actually applies, obviously, to those that you mix with. Pretty obvious. You don't love and serve the Mayavadis. You can also serve them too by hitting them on the head. Take a danda. Take their ek danda. Their ek danda and say, what is this? You're speaking all nonsense. Pow, pow. Beat them on the head.
There's so much competition here generally, you know, amongst each other to sort of the group that we want to do best. And so is it like the same thing in the spiritual world? Everyone is like, there's strong competition with people to serve Krishna and Radharani. Is it the same that we experience here?
Well, we can say it's described that there's some type of competition. But that's only the word is similar. It's the same spelling. The word is similar, but the actual implementation of the concept is quite opposite of what we know competition to be. Because our competition is usually mixed with a lot of envy and a lot of rajagun, passion. And many, many things are mixed in our competition. Envy, passion, our own desire for honor, our own desire for distinction, our own desire for recognition, our own desire to win or to defeat the other person. Many things are rolled into our ideas of competition. And all those things are absent in spiritual competition. There's no envy, and there's no everything is motivated and saturated with love, prema. Competition in the spiritual world, there's only one motive. There's no ulterior motives, no separate agenda. The competition in the spiritual world is only for the pleasure of Krishna. So gopis compete to make a better garland, or to sing better, or dance better, or make a longer garland, or cook better, or somehow do something better than another gopi, only for the pleasure and bring satisfaction of Krishna. And if they make a garland that's not so long, another gopi's is longer, and Krishna takes that garland and not their garland, that they don't become unhappy and envious. Oh, that dirty gopi! Why did Krishna take her garland? He's always favoring her. This is not fair. Why is he always paying attention to Barsha and never pays attention to me? There's no end. There's no thinking like that or feelings like that. It doesn't exist, because it's you write on the blackboard some of these mathematical formulas. They draw a line or in sentence structure in grammar class. They had the verb, subject, predicate, and line like this, object, preposition. So everything in the spiritual world is a expression of love, and everyone is desiring and trying. Everyone is cooperating. They're competing, but cooperatively competing. They're cooperating in their competition to win Krishna's favor, to bring more pleasure to Krishna, more satisfaction. And no one loses there. Sometimes here, someone. There's competition. There's first place, second place, third place, and loser. Isn't it? When you have a race, someone wins a race, someone's second place, gold medal, silver medal, and copper medal, and no medal. You lose. But in the spiritual world, everybody wins. A win-win situation. The loser also wins.
Here, Maharaj, we end up hurting each other at times.
Because of envy.
For being secretive or being assisting, there are two ways. I mean, it's like cooperating, like you're saying, and sometimes it's being secretive. And like, what a brand.
Yeah, well, that's material competition. Cut the other guy's tires, let the air out of his tires so you can get off first in the race.
Like an offense, Maharaj.
Offense.
It's only considered as an offense.
No, we're too quick to pull out the offense word. Everything's an offense. It's not, I don't know, offenses are specific. Offense is more of a is more of the mentality behind the action than the action itself. If your mentality is to hurt someone or belittle someone or decry them or to insult them or insult the scriptures or minimize the scriptures or the sadhus or Krishna, then that's an offense. But if your motivation is, I didn't mean any to hurt anyone, or somehow maybe they took it that way, but, and they're saying it's an offense and they took it that way, but that wasn't my motivation, I don't have any hateful feelings or envious feelings, then it's not really an offense. But nevertheless, to rectify and make that other person feel better, if they think like that or they feel like that, then you can go to them and beg forgiveness and go through all the motions as if it were a full-on offense. Because they see it that way, although God doesn't see it that way. And you don't really get, you're not really held accountable for making an offense because you didn't. Like someone might say, you owe me money. You owe me 10 rupees. And you know that you didn't lend them 10 rupees. There's no way you lent them 10 rupees. And then you ask them, do you have any witnesses? Anybody approve that I lent you 10? And they say, no. But no, I know you lent me 10 rupees. Don't you remember? And you know, and everybody knows that you never did. But if he keeps going around saying like that, he never paid me that bum. So then you may just pay him the 10 rupees to quiet him up. You understand?
Yeah.
So oftentimes people say, you offended me. You made offense. Especially if you go about 90 miles north of here. there's really a lot of this type of discussion. Everyone's like offense-pur, aparad-pur, hastinapur, indraprastha, and aparad-pur. Seems to be a lot of aparad, seems to be like everyone's middle name or something. My name is Krishna Aparad-das, Chaitanya Aparad-dasi. It's a very strange thing. Never till I came to India, I mean, I was in America serving and in charge of serving as a bhakta, I mean, brahmachari, and then temple president for 12 years. I served there. I never, hardly anybody talks about you made offense, or I never heard such a thing. When I came to Delhi in North India, one day I hear 100 times, 50 people saying, offense, offense, offense. It's like driving down Ring Road with all the red lights or something. Every 5 kilometers there's a red light. Every 10 minutes there's an offense. Boing, red light, oh, offense. Oh, stop the car. Okay, green light, okay, go. Oh, boing, offense. Oh, stop the car. It's rather hilarious to me. Because people don't have the slightest idea what, they don't know, especially when you study some Shastra, and anyone saying anything, oh, hey, you dropped your dopata, you know, that's an offense. Didn't you see Nectar Devotion, chapter 450? There's only 20 chapters. You know, 96 limbs of devotion. There's only 64, but it's so funny. Oh, you're carrying an eyeglass case in your top pocket? That's an offense. Don't you know? It's hypocrisy. It's an offense. You should keep it in your back pocket. It's really absurd. They should. I think if I was a bhakta, I would ask the bhakta leader, I said, can you recommend to someone, ISKCON GBC, you know, chairman or whoever, that they can make an official ISKCON offense handbook? ISKCON offense handbook. So then we would have. Because if you go in any town, I remember when I was small, we had a small town, I don't know how many people, 10,000 or 5 or whatever there was in there, I don't remember, a small town. And we went on a tour, a school tour of the town hall. It was 5th grade or something, town government. So they said, this is the mayor's office, this is the little courtroom, this little tiny courtroom. And there was a judge, it's a really tiny, small place. And then they said, this is our office of law, and this is our law book. It's a big, fat book. It was a law book. And it had all the laws, car parking and this and that. I was a little kid, and I was always kind of curious type, and I asked the guy, I said, I used to teach her, can I ask a question? I said, yeah. I saw this big fat book. I said, how many laws are there in that book? Nobody asked a question about 80 kids in a class. And I said, it looks so fat. He said, there's about 11, as of date, and we keep adding new ones every year. Because there's no law about frisbees. Frisbees is a little round plastic thing. You flip it like this and goes like that. So they didn't come out. There was no such thing as frisbees. So when frisbees came out, then they had to make laws to regulate them. No throwing frisbees out of your first floor apartment or whatever. Anybody throws frisbees out from their apartment house gets arrested. Because they'd be on the seventh floor and they go, whoosh, and grandma's walking down the street, boink. She gets hit in the head with a frisbee or whatever little kids would do. So they would every year they had another 100 laws. So he said, there's 11,000, as of date, today, 1957 or whenever it was, he said, there's 11,300 laws. So in the same vein, we should publish a law, ISKCON offense handbook. You know, it can have 57,000 offenses in it. And every year they can add more. If you drop your dopata on the temple floor, and it's an offense, and if, like this, if you have more than three badges on your, more than three buttons on your bead bag, it's an offense. And if you listen to anybody's taste but your own guru's, then that's a very big offense. And if you read any other books besides Prabhupada's books, that's a really mad elephant offense. And Prabhupada, in so many places, he said one should read all the books of the previous acharyas. He says in his own writing. So Prabhupada's telling this, and the guy in the temple is saying, only read Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada, in his own books, in his own purports, he's saying, we must read all the books of the previous acharyas. So this is becomes some difficulty. Kali Yuga, exactly. That's the easy way out. Kali Yuga, see, Kali is a personality, and Kali Yuga, he works with persons. You don't see Kali doing much with dogs. Kali, the dogs, he leaves them alone. They do their thing, and they're pretty predictable. Only man is unpredictable. No one can predict that a man is going to take a machine gun and go into a school and murder 74 children, 5 years old. Can you predict that? That a grown man, educated man, PhD, will take a machine gun and go into a nursery school and kill 75 children in the middle of the day. So only man is unpredictable. Animals are predictable. Dogs bark at night, they sleep in the day. It's predictable. But man is a very unusual species, very unusual creature. In other words, he's a weird bird. So he needs so many laws, so many regulations. So Kali lives with people. He is a personality, the personality of Kali. And his main job is to bring dissension, arguments, conflicts, battles, fighting. That's his happiness. He's happy when people fight. He's happy when people divide, go against each other. Sister to sister, husband to wife, brother to brother, shishya to guru, he's very happy. He's dancing. Ha ha, that's great, 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 more, more. So we can expect this is pretty much the nature of things. So when you live in the middle of the ocean, you should expect to get wet, isn't it? So this is Kali Yuga. So if we find ourselves in the middle of an argument, we shouldn't be surprised. What is this? I'm arguing with my mother about my dance classes. Or I'm arguing with my mother about my summer vacation. So we fight. So Kali is very much enjoying this age. Bosses fight with employees. Employees fight with their boss. Clients fight with the doctor. Doctor fights with the clients. Right? Daughters fight with their mother-in-laws. This is a classic one. It's a perennial one. And then what's the biggest fight of all? The fight with the senses. Battling the senses. Vishaya Sangraha. It's Madhurya Kadambini. Vishaya Sangraha. Fighting against sense gratification. Our senses are always pushing us to enjoy. And we have to say, no, Hare Krishna. Yes, Krishna. No, Maya. Yes, Krishna. No, Maya. Yes, yes, yes. No, no, no. Yes, yes, yes. No, no, no. Yes. No. Yes. Krishna. God save me. There but poor fortune go you or I. It's a fight. Prabhupada said that when one turns his face towards Krishna, because from time immemorial we're Krishna Bahirmukh, our face is turned opposite, 180 degrees away from Krishna. You can't see who's sitting behind you. Krishna is standing right behind us, so we never know it. He's walking behind us, standing behind us, sitting behind us. But we never see him because we never turn our back. We never turn our head around. So going back to Godhead means turning your head back. Turning your head, looking back. Krishna Bahirmukh, our face is outward looking. So we have to look within. We have to turn around. Antarmukh, look within to see Krishna. Look at Krishna. And then we can get strength to fight Kali. If Krishna is on our side, then what does Krishna tell Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita? 18th chapter, 78th verse. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Tatrashir Vijayabhutir. He says, Adruva Nityamatir Mama. He says, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Tatra Parta Dhanurdara Vijaya Bhutir Dhruva Nitya Matir Mama. He says, Matir Mama is my mati, is my inclination, is my idea. Sanjaya is telling Dhritarashtra, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Tatra Shir Vijaya. And he says, Parta Dhanurdara. Where there's a Dhanurdara, where there's Krishna, Yogeshwara, wherever there's Yogeshwara, Krishna, and wherever there's Arjuna holding that bow, there's Tatrashir Vijayau Bhutir, Tatrashir Vijayau Bhutir, there's strength, there's opulence, there's strength, there's power, there's victory, Vijay. Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama, Dhruva Niti. This is a very Dhruva Niti means this is Dhruva means it's a very firm Niti. It's a very firm law. Like Niti. Chanaka Niti. Niti means laws, aphorisms. Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Sanjay is telling at the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 78th verse, listen, Dhritarashtra, forget it. This battle is about to start. And there's no chance your armies and your son Duryodhana and your 100 sons will defeat the 5 Pandavas. Why? Because Arjuna is there and Krishna is there. God is there and the pure devotee is there. God and his pure devotee can never be defeated by anyone, anywhere, at any time. The 3 A's. Anywhere, anytime, anyone. So this is the success formula to get free from the grips of Kali. Take shelter of Yogeshwara. You have to be a great yogi. You have to be a great yogi to get free from the grips of the locks and bonds and straitjackets of Kali. He's a great magician, but Krishna is a greater, he's a yogi Ishvara. Kali is a great, Kali personified, Mr. Kali, Kali Yuga, he's a great yogi. He goes inside everybody's mind and creates conflict. He comes in the mind of the wife and mind of the husband and makes conflict, dissension, disagreement, disharmony, disunion, and then he dances. He dances in the mind. So that's a yogi. A yogi can enter into someone's mind, into their body. tantric yogi. So Kali is a great mystic yogi. But Krishna is Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. He's a Ishvara. He's a controller and the Lord of all yogis, of all mystic yogis. The mystic of all mystics. Yogi of all yogis. Super yogi. Super duper yogi. Master yogi. So if you submit to him, Kali will have... He'll be out of your mind, out of your heart. There'll be no conflict in your mind, no conflict in your heart, no conflict in your life. Some kavi kavi. Something must come. Gupta Shatru. Hidden enemies. There's one word I say that should be eliminated from the English language. Maybe in Bengali, I mean, Hindi you say, Lekin. Lekin? Lekin means, Lekin means but or because?
But.
Huh?
But.
Means but.
Actually,
they say Lekin and this and that, Lekin and that. So anyway, I don't know Hindi so much, but in English, there's one word. If this one word was eliminated from the language, everything would be much more harmonious and peaceful. If this three-letter word but, B-U-T, was eliminated, if the idea and the concept and the usage was eliminated, people would be better off, wouldn't they? Think about it. Just think about it. I thought about it a lot. Over my last 50 years. I'll give you an example. Someone starts describing. You say, oh, I'm thinking of this, I'm taking initiation from so-and-so Maharaj. So now here's what the other person will say. Oh, so-and-so Maharaj, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but. And then so many juicy things come, so many dry things come before, but. Oh yes, so-and-so Maharaj, he's very nice, he's GBC, XYZ, or this or that, or whatever. But. So they'll say a few good things, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, for at least 1 minute. Then comes the word B-U-T. And then they go on for 6 hours about how bad so-and-so is. Have you ever had the experience of such social intercourse? No? Yes?
So many.
Yes, no?
Yes.
Only in devotee line or also on karmi line?
Oh, yes. I think it's every day.
Everywhere, every day. Because sometimes they ask people, very wealthy, influential people, sometimes they ask them, if you could make the world a better place, they write articles like this in Reader's Digest. Can you tell us a list of 50 things that you would do if you could make the world a better place? And then this famous person, the former president of America, or some big person they interview, he said, yes, what would you do if you could do? What would you like to see in this? What would you like to see in this world to make it better? So then the person says, if I could fulfill my wish, I would pray that in the world there would be no starvation. No one in the world be starving, because by karma, by destiny, because of previous sins or whatever, there are actually thousands of people around the planet that are starving to death right now. As you know, the statistics are there. It's not my exaggeration. Certainly, you're all aware of that. So he says like that. That's one thing. That no one in the world would starve. Then the second thing. That there would be no fighting among nations. Ireland and the Irish Catholics and the English Protestants, or the Pakistan and India and Iraq and Iran or whatever. All these kind of fights are all over the place. There would be no fighting between nations. And then, of course, it's impossible. I know it's impossible, but nevertheless, I would also like to see a world where husbands and wives lived happily together. Well, that's an impossible dream, but anyway. So then he lists, and I would like to list a world where no one would ever, all the tree, people would plant trees everywhere, and there'd be beautiful flowering trees lining every road in the world. On each side of the road would be beautiful, not only flowering trees, but trees full of edible nuts and flowers and fruits. So any time of the year you could go down the roads and have shady leaves or pick fruits or nuts in the winter, and there'd be food trees and shade trees, which it was thousands of years ago. It wasn't just shade trees, but the trees would have bale fruits and all kinds of things. And like this. So I have the same, I sometimes think myself that if I would see the world, I would say, I would take this word out of circulation, B-U-T. But, yes, your husband, but, and then, you know, 5 hours later, tong, 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 tong. So this is an unfortunate world we live in. Manda sumanda matayo. We have to make the best use of a bad bargain. Prabhupada said that to us.